Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 425th episode of MTG Fast Finance, the podcast that's always just a few more treasures away from a cruel ultimatum from our significant others. MTG Fast Finance is your weekly podcast covering the world of Magic the Gathering finance, collection management, and speculation. I'm your host, James Chilcott, a.k.a. at MTG Critic on Twitter. My co-host is Cliff Daigle, a.k.a. at Word of Commander on Twitter. And we're here to help you folks make and save money playing our favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Hello, everybody. As always, I'm looking to diving into all the developments of the week. But before we do, I want to remind all of our listeners that this show is produced by MTGPrice.com, the leading MTG finance community. Please sign up today at MTGPrice.com to plan your specs, chat on a great Discord, and read articles by some of the best financial minds in the hobby.
MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Use the promo code FINANCE5, that's the number 5, during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. Cliff, what is on the agenda this week?
Well, we've got our usual segments to go through. Step one, we're going to go through the metagame. We've got a Pro Tour to talk about, plus a Modern Challenge. Segment two is our top movers in paper, followed by the top movers online. In segment four, you and I have cards to watch for the next coming times. And then in segment five, we're going to talk about some of the recent winners in Secret Lairs, which ones are really going up in value, which ones kind of haven't, and which one have spiked really, really quickly considering their release pattern.
Kicking things off with the metagame week in review, we've got a pretty big week to go through here. The Pro Tour for Outlaws of Thunder Junction was this weekend over in Seattle, Washington, USA. It was a standard event with opponents from all around the globe. Good to see a lot of the old names pulled back together for high-level play. Quite a good tournament overall. I didn't have a chance to watch it nearly as attentively as I would have in the old days when we were always like looking for the hot new spec to come out of the top tables. But Standard looked like it was in a pretty good place.
Yeah, we used to do round by round coverage. You remember that stuff? We were putting up blog posts about that. It was awesome to watch the top eight. Most of the events were pretty good. I really am impressed at how Wizards can put on a high level event. And it bums me out that they don't do this more often. They only do this for the Pro Tours. I mean, if they really want to grow their audience, they, you know, need to invest in the infrastructure to get it going again. The Star City Tour used to be a big draw, and now there's not minor ones going on.
Well, no, Star City is still doing tournament stops. It's just they're not doing the online coverage that they used to.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, we don't get to watch other people play.
Sure. So, I mean, the Pro Tour, the whole thing was taken down by Yoshihiko Ikawa playing Domain Ramp. He had three copies of Atraxa Grand Unifier and four copies of Archangel of Wrath, alongside Imidane's Recruiter, Topiary Stomper, Herd Migration, Sunfall, Cartographer Survey, Depopulate, Glimpse the Core, Leyline Binding, Spelunking, Up the Beanstalk, and Long Goodbye. So, kind of like a ramp control strategy that ends up going over the top of everybody with Atraxa castings.
One of the things that they mentioned frequently on the broadcast was that the first Atraxa will almost always find you the next Atraxa, plus a bunch of other gas to do. So if you have a problem with it, you'll get there. And with Cavern of Souls, you put it down, you name Angel. There is not a window in which somebody can Field of Ruin away your Cavern of Souls. You're going to have an uncountable Angel. You're going to have that come into play trigger. And by golly, that Atraxa will find you another Cavern of Souls if it's a problem. It's a redundancy that's really hard to beat.
Second place was Grandmaster Yuta Takahashi playing Blue-White Control. Good to see that archetype back at the forefront of Standard. This is a pretty classic-looking Blue-White Control list with featuring most notably four copies of the Wandering Emperor and three copies of Sunfall as their sweeper of choice. I run that one in my Esper Angels builds on Arena as well, because you can get rid of the whole board, you know, sweep away a bunch of goblins or elves or whatever, and end up with a token of your own that can start beating in the opposite direction.
I mean, Sunfall is currently at $4 for $4.50 for the cheapest copies, and it's got a long time to go in standard, so we might see it do surprisingly well by the time it rotates out.
It's also worth noting that they were running the full four copies of Three Steps Ahead. This is the spree card that defaults to cancel as its kind of worst case scenario, or allows you to draw two, discard one, also on three mana. And then you can mix and match those two modes, as well as adding create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control. So if you want to get a copy of your
Samurai token,
I suppose. I was just pausing to look for any other creatures they could be copying out of their list.
It'll copy an artifact too, so if you've got a spare clue token, you could throw that in there. That's an expensive way to get an extra card, but that's what a control deck wants to do.
Yeah, fair enough. It looks like that mode is probably used fairly infrequently. They also have two copies of Phantom Interference, which is the other spree card that makes a spirit 2/2 spirit creature token with flying, so they could be copying that, and they can also use that one to counter people out of the game. We had Boros Convoke in third in the hands of Takumi Matsuura, for Knight Errant of Eos and for Imidane's Recruiter in a version of an archetype that has been doing pretty well in both Standard and Pioneer over the last 6 months or so. Esper Midrange has been a force in Standard for the better part of the last year. Arnie Hushenbeth tabled fourth place version of the list that had four Raphine, two the Wandering Emperor, and three Virtue of Loyalty as standouts. Ri Zhang was on Four Color Legends at fifth place, as was Jason Yi in seventh place, and I really enjoyed watching the Four Color Legends default list go against Brian Kibler's Five Color Legends brew in the early rounds. Just watching them do completely ridiculous things with Slogurk, with Rona, with the Relic of Legends, allowing them to tap all of their legends to get more legends into play, and the decks just look super fun.
I mean, we all know that you love a good Johto deck as well.
Yeah, I mean, seeing Kibler cast Johto was definitely a highlight of the tournament for me. Also worth noting that both the red-white brews and the four-color legends tend to run four copies of Inti. Just an absolutely fantastic looting, card advantage, beatdown engine that is doing well in Cube, doing well in Standard, has a shot at play in both Pioneer and Modern on an ongoing basis. Just a great card. Esper Midrange was also in sixth, and then the top eight was wrapped up by Sean Goddard on Teamer Analyst, running four Nissa out of Aftermath, three World Souls Rage, and four Virtue of Courage. This is the list you've been practicing on Arena as well, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There were some slight differences in how Sean built their deck and how mine was going. But the full redundancy was on display. Like, if you don't have the interaction necessary, I don't know if you saw that the first round was Goddard versus Ikawa. And it was just like the first two rounds were just build, 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 blam, build, 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 blam. And then in the after sideboarding with some interaction, that it's got to hurt to go up 2-0 and then lose the next three.
Over on Saturday, while people were at the Pro Tour, the Modern Challenge on Magic Online was taken down by Black Red Scam in first and third. Black Green Yawgmoth was in second. Shardless Footfalls in fifth. Blue White Control in sixth, running four copies of The Wandering Emperor, Four Solitude, Four Narset, Parter of Veils. Living End was in eighth. Both the Living End list and the Shardless Footfalls list are on their four copies of Ardent Plea. Living End also running four copies of Grief and, of course, four copies of their namesake Living End. The two most interesting decks in here are at the top end of interesting. We've got fourth place Mono White Martyr of Sands. I have not seen this archetype in Modern in a few years. They had four Eagles of the North, one Haywire Mite, one Cammy of False Hope, three Martyr of Sands, four Ranger Captain of Eos to go get it, three Skyclave Apparition, four Solitude, two Thraben Inspector, three Abiding Grace, which is an MH2 card that brought this archetype back to life and was experimented with, you know, in the summer, late summer of 2021, and then kind of fell off the radar again. This is an enchantment for two and a white. At the beginning of your end step, you can choose one. You either gain a life, which you almost never choose, or you return target creature card with mana value one from your graveyard to the battlefield, which is going to be your default mode when you're basically putting the Martyr of Sands back onto the table. You've got a bunch of cards in your hand because the deck can run four copies of the One Ring. So it refills its hand with the One Ring. And then the way the Martyr of Sands works is it's just a 1-1 for one. But if you pay one and reveal X white cards, you get three times X life. So reveal four white cards out of your hand after building them up with the One Ring. Reveal them with Martyr of Sands. Sack it, goes to the yard, you get 12 life, and then Abiding Grace puts it back into play on the end step and lets you do it all over again. So that could be 24 life just on your turn. Pass go. How many bolts you got in hand?
And then you're using the One Ring, you're resetting how many cards in hand, like you said. I would love to know more about how this deck put its life total to work. Like, was there one Aetherflux Reservoir in there for just, you know, giant space laser death? That'd be great. I'd love if they did that. I know they didn't, but it'd be great if they did.
It's also cute that they run Temporary Lockdown, which exiles all the non-land permanents, 2 mana or less. They have a bunch of those in their deck, but most of them can be sacrificed on command. And so what they do is they just sack them to the yard, cast Temporary Lockdown, get rid of the other person's, you know, prowess creatures, their Monastery Swift Spears, their Ragavans and what have you, and then theirs are just going to pop back out of the yard later. They're also running a Winds of Abandon in the main, which is an MH1 card I run a lot in EDH, but you hardly ever see in Modern. 2 Emyria, the Sky Ruin in the pretty elegant mana base here. 2 Demolition Field, 4 Field of Ruin. So they definitely have punishing land destruction angle against the 4 and 5 color control builds in the format. And I see a couple of the Surveil lands in here as well.
This is a beautiful thing. You've got, with the Abiding Grace, you've also got the option to bring back Thraben Inspectors. You can bring back your Kami of False Hope to just prevent all combat damage. And then there's a Haywire Mite for funsies as well. When's the last time we saw a Singleton Mite, but no Urza's Saga in the main deck?
Oh, yeah. They don't run the Saga package at all. Yeah, and I mean, the Mite, they go get, instead of getting it with Saga, they get it with Ranger Captain and Vios.
Oh, right. That's the thing they do. You're right. Ooh, Ranger makes that. So that's why there's only 3 Martyr of Sands. Usually they're playing the full board of them. But my golly, this is a great deck. I bet this, there were people just gnawing their own arms off. They didn't know what to do against this.
The other thing is, we've seen red-white prowess, I mean, sorry, red-white convoke make its way all the way into Modern in a couple of top eights recently. And here we also see the Lotus Field deck from Pioneer making its way into the format. 3 Mishra's Bauble, 4 Wishclaw Talisman, 1 Thassa's Oracle, 4 Underworld Breach and Ad Nauseam, 4 Consider, 4 Dreams Script, 2 Is It Charm, 4 Otherworldly Gaze, 2 Pact of Negation, 4 Twiddle, 4 Preordain, 2 Tome Scour, 1 Void Snare, and 20 lands, including the necessary for Lotus Field.
So this one is a breach deck trying to mill itself out with Ad Nauseam and win with a Thoracle, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I see that.
Could explain why I sold a few Wishclaw Talismans last week as well. Moving on over to top paper movers, all sorts of action. It's been a busy year, and I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon with all everything that's going to go on once Modern Horizon 3 hits next month. We've got quite a lot of action, starting with Vaultborn Tyrant Extended Arts going 25 to 38. That's 52% gains. People are going after those big mythics given their low drop rates, and especially the ones that have higher inclusion. Vaultborn Tyrant is just a great card in Dinosaur decks and EDH. Fomori Vault Showcase Foils going 40 to 65. More big mythic targeting there, leading to 63% gains. Got Waste Knot showing up in some discard-focused rack decks that I've caught sight of on streams in Modern lately. And as a result, the M15 copies non-foil going 3 to 6, 100% gains. Vaultborn Tyrant Showcase, not Extended Art, 24 to 48, 100% gains on that one as well. A couple weeks back, Cliff called Tasha the Witch Queen to pop off as a result of one of the new commanders from OTJ. Borderless non-foil copies going 4 to 825 this week, 106% gains. You've also got Power Fist Extended Art out of the Fallout release. 4 to 950. That's a really good card in Counters Matters decks in EDH. I certainly slipped one into my Creature Counters Matters deck under Atraxa as the commander. Open the Way, retro version of Aftermath, 250 to 650. I didn't clock what was going on there specifically. I'm not sure if it's one of the Lands Matters commanders out of OTJ that's driving that.
That's a pretty reasonable guess. There's a couple of ways to go crazy with that, but we'll have to see if it pops up in one of the lists.
Does Open the Way let you go get Deserts?
Let's see.
It says, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal X land cards. So yeah, it's probably the desert-related commander.
Probably.
We've also got Grim Hireling Extended Arts out of the Dungeons & Dragons AFC release. $10 to $30, and I think regular copies out of the Party Time decks have gotten up to $20 or $25 again. This is just a fantastic card that makes perfect sense in the new Mardu Treasures Matters builds in EDH, and it's just generally good and has high stats for EDH. It's only got the two printings overall. Caustic Bronco was on camera in one of the decks early on at the Pro Tour. It had some combo with Shadow of Mortality where it could swing, and if it had been saddled then and you revealed the Shadow of Mortality, you could do 13, I believe, to the opponent right on the spot.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
And get pretty close to winning the game. As a result, the foil extended arts going $1.50 to $5 over the weekend, 233% gains. We've also got Moldroth of the Gravetide foils out of Double Masters 2022. That's just about 2 years ago, going $5 to $20 over the last 4 weeks or so. One of the better commanders of all time, a list that only gets better and better. Mine current tuning is pretty nasty, probably like an 8.5 or a 9. And you can certainly run an EDH if you want to get real sexy about it. The foils have only been printed the one reprint. There's also a borderless foil, but those are significantly more expensive. So not super surprised to see that version taking off. Collector's Cage, I saw spotted in a Hideaway demo list that Aspiring Spike was running last week, where he was doing funky things with the Hideaway cards to cast like an Emrakul in a mono white deck. And as a result, the Collector's Cage out of the big release went $3 to $12, 300% gains. Extravagant Replication, non-foils out of Streets of New Capenna commander cards, going 4 to 25 on the back of Obeka, 500% gains as the biggest gainer of the week.
It's a pretty crazy thing. For 6 mana, at the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of another permanent you control. You could target itself. Oh, well, you know you can't target itself. But, you're getting copies of everything for every Obeka damage you did, and that's where things really get out of hand. Good call. I'm sure that's a lot of fun to do, and it definitely doesn't turn into a calculus problem.
Definitely worth flagging for the people that opened a lot of Streets of New Capenna going for the showcase tri-lands and being disappointed later when the overall EV crashed on overprinting. Extravagant Replication being over $20, that's going to be a good get if you got a few of those sitting around in your SNC, NCC bulk box that you weren't aware of.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you found them if you cracked the collector boosters. So get to it, folks. Find your bulk.
Top Magic Online movers of the week. You have Demolich Extended Art, which is a promo in that scenario. 1.21 ticks to 2.97, 145% gains. That's probably on the back of the blue-red Arclight Demolich deck that Aspiring Spike was playing on YouTube and Twitch this week. You've also got Emiria's Call out of Zendikar Rising, 1.33 ticks to 5.11. It's been doing well in a mono-white initiative deck in Vintage, and there's probably a version in Legacy that runs it as well. I've also spotted copies of that card in a variety of different lists in both Pioneer and Modern. 284% gains total there. Three Steps Ahead was that modal counterspell plus other options card that we saw in the blue-white control deck that finished second at the Pro Tour. As a result, it went 0.58 ticks to 2.58, 344% gains, as will tend to happen when a deck takes the Pro Tour by storm.
It's been so long since we had like a standard Pro Tour that really affected prices. It's nice to see, the birds coming home to roost again and other signs that life is, returning back to normal.
I mean, I haven't seen a lot of movement in paper so far, and I think the season moves on to something different. I can't remember if it's Pioneer or Modern. I got to assume that Pro Tour or Modern Horizons 3 is
probably
a modern event.
Yeah, I would think so, but we'll see.
Kind of has to be. All right, so we can move on to cards to watch. I got a couple of pretty low-hanging fruit juicy picks here. There is one of the secret layers we're going to talk about at the end here is the Through the Wormhole Galaxy Foil release that I am almost sold out of. I have one copy left on the shelf. Those were originally $50. They're now going for $135+, and the total value of the singles is another $10 or $15 beyond that. And one of those singles is the Arcane Signet Galaxy Foil, currently available around $30. It's already up from as low as, let's see, how much was it back in December? You could get them as low as $12 or $13 on opening weekend, and it's done nothing but go up since. So it looks like a lot of the meat has been shaved off this bone, but we're down, if you look at Foil Near Mint on TCG Player, you are down to just 18 listings. There are a couple of vendors that have four copies or six copies, but most people have one or two, sometimes three, sometimes four. Bottom line, you got less than 40 copies or 50 copies total to go, and it's a pretty steep ramp between 30 and 50. Arcane Signet is in, according to EDH Rec, 2.75 million decks?
I mean, we know two mana rocks are good, so why wouldn't this be among the highest possible ones?
You're talking about 70% plus inclusion rate across the entire hobby. So, a pretty good chance. We don't talk about EDH rec stats in the millions very often, but these are the kinds of cards that tend to qualify when they're auto includes. There are plenty of versions of this card, but the good ones always tend to be worth money. I don't think it's crazy for these Galaxy Foils to get up higher, given that they are one of the more premium treatments ever offered. And my second card is more of the same. I may as well cover it at the same time. The Command Tower out of the same drop is currently available for around $22. There's 30 listings left, Foil Near Mint. These going 22 to 40... at 2.85 million on EDH rec between the two of them. I don't think you can go wrong here. You buy a couple of these at minimum, you stick them in your deck for a year or two, you're going to go back and look at them again and realize they're very expensive indeed.
I can't argue with the Arcane Signet pick, mainly because while there are multiple borderless versions of Arcane Signet, and one was just in the Rowena Kai version, and that's a sweet looking signet.
And Fallout. There's a Pip-Boy one as well.
There's a Pip-Boy one. There's a Borderless in the Lost Caverns of Ixalan special guests. There's the Borderless in Commander Masters. There's a couple of the Thanos Gauntlet versions running around. There's the Surge Foils from the Fallout decks. There's a Dan Signet Arcane Signet. Dan Frazier Arcane Signet. There's a lot of Arcane Signets. Let's not beat around the bush there. But this is the only Galaxy Foil one so far. We've gotten the Surge Foil printing a couple of ways, and I think we've already seen a couple of those go from, you know, relatively cheap to surprisingly expensive. This, considering how that entire secret layer is just popped off, it makes a lot of sense as a pick, and I don't know if any of the versions of Arcane Signet have reached $50 yet. But this one, well, the Pip-Boy one is in Surge Foil, is probably the most expensive right now. That one's going for $65, so you're playing for second place here, but your pick to go 30 to 50 seems real easy for it to do. And if you, this is definitely a call for your personal version. If you like this, you should definitely snag it. Same thing for Command Tower. We've had a lot of Command Towers over the years, and years to go 22 to 40 is another incredibly reasonable, very easy. Go get your personal copies. Thank us later. If it goes higher, you can thank us more loudly. And these are two solid picks, James. I approve highly.
A little tip for the collectors and EDH players listening. Galaxy Foil looks way, way better in hand than Surge Foil. Surge Foils keep getting targeted because they tend to have a lower drop rate, so it's easier to corner them, but they don't actually look better. The search foiling actually tends to obscure the art, whereas the galaxy foil, in the case of the arcane signet and the command tower, highlights it. Get them in hand and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I've got a couple of galaxy foils in my Mr. House deck, and I agree they do pop nicely. I'm not sure it's a huge a thing as that statement sounded, but I agree that they definitely look different. So I'm on board with that. You know, this is a sweet version, and galaxy foiling appears to be a thing they're not going to do as regularly as surge foiling or textured foiling or raised foiling or double rainbow foiling. The list goes on, man. The list goes on.
What's your first selection this week?
Speaking of textured foils, I think that Mindslaver in the textured foil is underpriced right now. So Mindslaver, amazingly, is only listed in 13,000 EDH rec decks. And that feels audaciously low, considering it's got to be in 13,000 cubes just on its own. But it can't take over a whole table. It can only take over one person's turn repeatedly, unless you have like some other mega infinite combo going on, and then everybody's just going to concede to you anyway. So right now, the textured foil being a 1 in 1500 drop on the collector boosters for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, you can get it right now for 65 on EDH rec, on TCG Player. And honestly, when I first looked this up earlier today, there were a couple copies under 60, but those have gotten bought in the last few hours. So your copies are now looking at 65, and I think that they're a pretty solid bet to hit $90 sometime in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, I don't love the overall play pattern for the card. It's not like a super big deal in EDH or anything, but it's a well-known card, and this is very cool art that looks extra special good in the textured foil version. This is really just a supply side play. The textured foils have an extremely low drop rate. There's only 11 listings left in TCG Player. There's a scant handful of these to clean up in various markets, and then they're going to pop over 100. So I think it's a pretty straightforward pick overall.
I agree. I'm glad you agree. My other pick this week is a little more targeted. Helios 1 out of the Fallout collector boosters. I like the surge foils in the regular frame, but you could talk me into the extended art surge foils. The regular frame surge foils are currently going for $3, and I think they've got a good chance to hit $8 when we get all the new energy stuff this coming summer in Modern Horizons 3. There are blessed few ways to repeatedly and consistently make energy, and Helios 1 just says one tap, add an energy. I don't think that the ability is overpowered, especially because you have to pay X energy and sacrifice the land to destroy target permanent with a mana value equal to what you sacrificed, well, what you paid, excuse me. But I think that everything energy related is about to have a big summer, and this land is going to be a big part of that entire arrangement.
Yeah, given that energy is heading into a big summer, and we know that the Fallout Boy release was, generally speaking, a low print run, the surge foil regular frames are even harder to pull than the showcase surge foils in some cases, and a lot of energy decks are probably going to want to add Helios 1. The energy cards in MH3 will not include this card. There's no way there's a reprint there. So I could see people reaching for these. They've done nothing but go down since release, but that's because nobody has really anything to be doing with energy outside of Dr. Madison Lee. So once we get the rest of the energy cards from MH3, I could easily see these popping off, as you predicted, 3 to 8, you said? Yeah, that seems possible.
Yep.
The fact that this can tap to make energy counters is the key.
Right, because, repeatable energy is really difficult to find. And
on something they can't easily get rid of, because most EDH decks are not running, you know, Strip Mine unless it's EDH.
CDH. I mean, there's going to be better targets for the Miser, whatever, Field of Ruin or Demolition Field or whatever it is you're running to deal with somebody's Gaia's Cradle or whatever. You're not going to bother with their Helios 1.
Yep. All right. Weekly topic. We wanted to go over some recent wins in the Secret Lair markets. The Secret Lair releases for the first couple years were pretty hit or miss. But since Wizards has decided to tighten up their policy on releases, where they have said we are not going to pre-print a certain amount and then print more to meet any additional demand. We're just going to take a guess at what we're supposed to print. We're going to put it up for sale. If it sells out, it sells out, and it will not be reprinted. That has led over the last several months to a significantly higher number of secret layers selling out. They're presumably printing less than they used to, at least of the ones that they're not super confident in. And when things sell out, they go up. That's just kind of how the collectibles market works. And it's starting to look like just being relatively judicious in how you select which secret layers to invest in is going to pay off really well, as long as the trend line continues. Here are some examples. We talked earlier about the Through the Wormhole Galaxy Foil release. That just came out last November, so we're less than 6 months away from that release. The Galaxy Foil version was $50 at release and currently sells for $135 on TCG Player and eBay. That's non-annualized returns of 170% and significantly above that on an annualized schedule. I've just about sold through all of those. I have one version left, and I will probably mark it up another $15 or $20 and just wait until it sells to somebody that's willing to pay overseas shipping for it. We also have the Sheldon Menery Sheldon Spellbook release, which I completely whiffed on getting into my cart on the correct day.
What? You missed out?
Yeah, I would have gone as deep as they let me. I don't know if it was 20 units or whatever, but I would have gone very, very deep on these. This one is on this list as kind of a precursor, because I assume it's going to work out. This doesn't even land and get delivered until July of this year, so you can't prove what, you know, how it did yet. The pre-order pricing is at about $130. I would imagine you'll see it drop under $100 on opening weekend. But whatever it gets down to is probably a buy anyway, because you have to assume that this was heavily bought by vendors and speculators and collectors, but it's a pretty big deal release. I mean, this is one of the guys who was instrumental in the advent of the EDH era for Magic, and he has passed away. He was a beloved character in the community, and they've given him his own secret lair. It's going to be, you know, a pretty important collectible for EDH lovers for years to come. So this one seems to be kind of a must purchase if you want this stuff for your collection. It's also not the kind of thing I could ever see them going back to, because right. It would be rather gauche to attempt to mine this particular well twice.
So you think even when they get around to Secret Lair Masters, they'll leave out Sheldon stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's tacky to do that. So
no argument here.
Yeah. One of the ones from October 2022, so a little further back, that did really well was the Junji Ito foil release that was available in both English and Japanese. And there was also another release by another Japanese artist that had featured Thoughtseize. I can't remember the name of that artist off the top of my head, but both of them have done very well for those of us that were in early. I think the Junji Ito foils in both languages were $40. They currently sell for $150. That's, you know, well over 100%, even when you annualize it, 275% non-annualized. And that's just a great example alongside the Through the Wormhole of a very unique art style paired with a really cool treatment. And, you know, EDH players just lapping it up.
I was going to say that when you combine the great art, it doesn't always have to be about how playable the cards are, because we had, when was this? The one with like the Massacre Girl and a Teza Karlov and an Azusa. I don't remember what the name of the secret lair was, but all of those have just gone bonkers because not a lot of people bought
City Styles or something?
City Styles, that was the one. And yeah. So there are a lot of examples of secret lairs where when they were printing as many as the market asked for, if the market didn't ask for very many, well, later on, people were like, where's my secret lair? And this one looks really sweet. And the Junji Ito is another good example of that.
My general take is that with stuff like pet-themed secret lairs, they were often underestimated up front. And what that meant is that a lot of vendors didn't go deep on them. But a lot of pet owners just kind of didn't notice them or forgot about them or found out about them later, or, you know, they get into the game a year or two after the release originally occurred, and now somebody mentions it or they trip over it and now they want it, And because not that many vendors were committed to it as a theme, it didn't sell that well. There weren't that many sitting around in the market for anybody to buy. And so a lot of those early pet themed or super cute secret layers have soared over time. And indeed, the pet themed commander deck could easily be on this list as well, along with most of the other. Also with the angel deck and the coin deck. I mean, the decks that they've released have been easy money so far as well. One of the other big ones here was the Princess Bride, which came out last October. Those were available at $30 for non-foil, $40 for foil, and the non-foils are going for $100 plus now. So another example of, you know, 200% plus gains, regular ROI, and even more than that annualized. Another one of the ones I forgot to buy. I didn't intend to buy it as a spec, so I wouldn't have had that many copies anyway. I think I just wanted like one or two. I was going to give one to my dad for Christmas and keep one for myself. Because I figured, like, you know, I wasn't sure how resonant Princess Bride was 30 years later. Turns out, plenty enough, given how good the art was. And the other one on this list is Jurassic Park Life Breaks Free. One of the pro traders flagged it in the Discord the other day that this had gone 40 to 150 since November. So really big returns available in under 6 months in a very straightforward process that doesn't have a lot of overhead. It's a lot cheaper to ship these out and get them shipped to you these days because they've taken the packaging and taken it from boxes down to envelopes in some cases.
Some of them, like the Princess Bride one, is still boxy. It's very annoying, but hopefully they get around to making just all of them envelopes.
One of the things I've taken to doing with the boxed ones, like the Dan Fraser Signet and Talisman sets, is I just crack one of each, group them together. In the case of those ones in particular, you would get one Felwar stone each, but I just package them as the full set. So you end up selling the full set, and you can then you don't have to ship out the boxes. You can just ship out a flat package with a small acrylic case with all 11 cards in it or whatever, and then you end up selling the Felwar stone separately for $10 or $15, the bonus Felwar stone. And that's been very successful because, you know, often people are more than happy to combine shipping in that way. And just the words full set, if you don't have any of them, is just, is catnip to collectors because they want the full set. So now they can get it in a single listing. And that's one of the benefits of settling on a platform like eBay as opposed to TCG Player, is that you can recombine things in sensible ways and address the market in a way that's going to get stuff sold.
Now, it is worth mentioning that, you know, not every set has gone the same way. This has just been some of the most popular stuff, either due to nostalgia, art, collectability. So, like, for example, the Creepshow secret layer from the same time, that's, you know, pure zombies, that one is still available under $50 for the foil version. So it's not like every one of these secret layers has gone crazy. It's just that, you know, dinosaurs went wild with Pat Laza coming out. If we got a brand new zombie commander who would love some more blue-black zombie greatness, I think if the new Gisa is really ridiculous if you played her in OTJ Limited. But if we get a new zombie commander, we might see the Creepshow one pop off. But they've done a good job making these theme secret layers. And I think that it just depends on, does the theme hit in the moment? And we've got some excellent examples of them hitting hard in the moment, whether it's dinosaurs, Princess Bride nostalgia, or the Junji Ito art, which was just a low supply play.
So this leads us into the discussion of a new announcement that just came out today, just a couple of hours ago. Secret Lair sent out emails to followers that there is going to be, as part of the spring super drop that will be released on, I think it was May 13th or something.
Let's see, is that the date? Let's see, May 13th at 9 a.m. Pacific, yes.
Yeah, so they're going to do four drops this year that are related to Hatsune Miku, which is a virtual reality pop star, like an anime character with blue pigtails, who's been around for years, and, you know, her YouTube following is like 3 million. Something like that. And I would imagine in the Asian equivalents, they would be even a much higher number and a much higher recognition factor. Among a bunch of our boomer pro traders, they were just kind of shrugging like, what the F is this?
She played Coachella, man. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. And so they're going to do over the next four super drops, like into the fall, I guess, there's going to be a Hatsune Miku drop in each of those, I would imagine. And this first one is low card quality, varied art quality would be my take on this. There's Shelter, Miku's Spark, which is Chandra's Ignition, not an important card. Harmonize, not an important card, but probably the truest representation of the character. Miku Lost But Singing, which is a take on Azusa Lost But Seeking, probably the most important card in the bunch. Miku the Renowned, which is Feather the Redeemed. That's one of my commanders. I think that this is definitely the best art for Feather and doesn't scream Miku, really. So I think I would probably upgrade my Feather to this version. And then Inspiring Vantage has the best art. I think that's... can't quite see which artist that is.
That's Danny Pendergast.
Yeah, I've been impressed by his art in prior releases. So this Inspiring Vantage is pretty nice as well. This one is interesting because there is absolutely a market for products related to this character. How overlapping the Venn diagrams are with Magic players is a question mark. I don't know. So I will probably dabble in the first release and then see how it goes. But this is one of those cases where I think once the whole thing is done, you will be able to take the full set of Hatsune Miku releases, throw it up on eBay together, and probably get a premium by selling it overseas.
I would agree with that. That sounds like a fun thing to go after. I mean, the Discord was immediately full of, like, why this card? And especially, like, the Fastlands, not really big on the commander player's wish list. And so this is just all about the name choices, and I'm guessing the music and, you know, the character's representation and everything. But honestly, this is, you know, if you don't think it's for you, that's fine. Just understand that there are a boatload of people who it is for, and I would not, do you have any doubt that this is going to sell out?
Oh, James. I don't know.
This is a pie bet if there's ever been one.
So let me explain my logic, though. It doesn't matter that it has a ton of fans if they don't know it exists.
Right? I'm not arguing that point.
If IGN.com runs a full article on this on a Friday evening or something, yeah, they could sell out. But if they don't get that kind of coverage and it's just covered by, like, Magic content creators, then that's a different story. Right? Like, it's, you know, okay, there could be something really cool going on in Tokyo, like a special event about Optimus Prime or something one weekend. But if Transformer fans in North America don't hear about it until a month later, or only the very diehards that are paying attention to every single relevant tweet hear about it, then it can factor into how that product plays out. My gut says there's money to be made here. I just don't know if it's one of the ones that's going to end up $100 plus in short order.
Okay. So let's...
I will say this, though. It seems like the kind of thing that would not appeal to most of the Midwestern vendors that tend to stock this stuff in volume. And that could mean that if they're too boomer to recognize the potential value, they might not order much of it. And if it undersells, then that increases the chances that it will go up later.
Now, also worth mentioning, this is going to be available in English and in Japanese language.
Ah, yes, also true. And that came out, that came up with the Junji Ito and the other release whose name, the artist, sorry, apologies to the other artist that was released in that same super drop. The one that has Skull Clamp and Phyrexian Metamorph, and they have, like, metallic inks on the cards, and they're really, really nice. I have a full set of them in my Brea deck. They were also released in English and Japanese. And generally what we saw was that in the North American market, the Japanese copies trailed the English, but there was less of the Japanese sold, so they sold out faster.
So I
would imagine that that could well be the same thing again. And I will probably split my purchase between English and Japanese here.
Okay. So I'm inclined to agree. I'm going to want a little bit of everything. I think I'm going to stick with my general plan of foils only. I think the foils will sell out faster than the non-foils. But I have zero doubt in my mind that the speculators will be enough to make up the difference on the interest level for this. I don't think this lasts the whole day before it's sold out.
I think the other factor here is we don't know what else is in the super drop. Right? Like there could be an absolute home run in the super drop, in which case most of my money will go to that.
I mean, we're looking at Azusa is probably the anchor for this one, right? In terms of like,
yeah, it has to be. Raw has to be. The rest, most of the rest of this is trash. In terms of like card demand,
The City Styles Azusa is $43 in non foil and just under 50 in foil. So looking at it from that perspective, another Azusa is, you know, if this goes for 20 to 30, the actual risk you're taking is remarkably absorbed, and I think that the art alone is going to get probably the shelter to go to a surprising level. That's a really nice piece of art, even if you don't know that this person only exists in a bunch of servers and whatnot. So the appeal, I think, is here, and I will probably get a few, and I don't, like I said, I don't think that this is going to last an entire 24 hours before it, this particular secret lair at least, is sold out. Do you think that in terms of how long it takes to get a card from idea to printed, were the quantities for this drop set before the most recent secret lair, the Fallout secret lair, before it sold out mostly within a few days?
Yeah, I would say so. But right. The drop level control started last fall, so you know, I would imagine that they are looking at the information for previous anime related drops and they're tuning this one accordingly.
That's fair.
But they might tune it up a bit because they believe, I mean, they wouldn't be partnering with Hatsune Miku's like agency or whatever unless they thought the demographics proved it out.
Is there an overlap between Magic players and anime fans? Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, I believe that, but I'm an anime fan, but I'm not a Hatsune Miku fan, because to me, this is the most basic trash anime I can imagine. Like, I'm into really cool anime, not very generic, not super generic anime.
We definitely don't need to make our Hatsune Miku fans in the audience mad, so...
We can just package it with some comments on Taylor Swift and just get me attacked from all angles.
I want to say that MTG Price and especially Cliff Dable have no affiliation with the foolishness that this man is spouting. Thank you very much.
So, like, the funny... So, here, let me give you an example of how, like...
Oh, God.
I have an opinion, but it doesn't matter. Oh, so, I think... I rank the art as Feather, Inspiring Vantage, and then the rest is trash. But I would guess the average Hatsune Miku fan will, like, Harmonize the best. Harmonize and Shelter, because they're the closest to their understanding of the character. And then probably Miku Lost But Sea King, Miku Spark, and then the Vantage and Miku Renowned would probably be towards the bottom.
I will be amazed. Like I didn't see the City Styles one coming. So I'm trying to take myself and my taste out of the equation. Mm-hmm.
Which is a good idea.
And so like just because I don't necessarily I know a little bit about this, I've had to look up some of this because I teach high school kids and I heard them talk about it. And so from what I can tell, the people who love this stuff are crazy about it. And I have learned that the collectability and the desire are stronger than what my old self think. So just because this Inspiring Vantage is kind of Sailor Moon reminiscent for me, if you made those pigtails yellow, I'd be like, oh my God, that's a Sailor Moon thing. I know that bit. But it's not. And so I just have to accept it as people are going to be after this. And I stand by my statement. I don't think these are going to last, especially once there's some kind of publicity for it. It would seem silly that the actual, you know, whoever runs Hatsune Miku's Twitter feed and whatever, they will probably promote this, and the folks who care, they'll find out.
Well, and that's what will matter. you know, are they going to do that on their account, or is it only going to happen on the Magic-specific accounts? That will absolutely matter. So, you know, we'll check that out in 2 weeks and see what's up. In the meantime, where can folks find you online, my friend?
You can find me online on Twitter at Word of Commander, or my articles every Friday on mtgprice.com.
And you folks can find me on Twitter at mtgcritic, as well as via my occasional articles on mtgprice.com and my constant haunting of the Pro Trader Discord, including all the action we've got going on right now, setting up group buys for Modern Horizons 3 at some of the best pricing available anywhere in the world. I'd also like to remind our listeners to check out the mtgprice.com Pro Trader service. For just $9.99 a month or $109.99 per year, you can get early access to this podcast, fantastic articles by the best MTG finance minds in the business, low-cost group buys, and a super active Discord forum that will drive better returns and save you money playing Magic the Gathering.
Once again, MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Please use the promo code FINANCE5, that's finance with the number 5, during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. That's it for this week, James, but heaven only knows what's waiting for us by next week, man.
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, everybody listening, and we will see you all next week on another episode of MTG Fast Finance.